You know, do you think it would be a good idea for my husband to come and share his story? Because, you know, I mention him all the time in my presentations, and they were like, you know what, that's great, let's do it. And Joshua kind of explained to you, especially Mrs. Brondike and Mrs. Wilden's reaction when they heard one of their former students share some pretty tough stuff that he went through even while he was a student at Clinton High. So no, we're not getting to hear much of Morgan's story, and I know Christine is devastated about that, but we're gonna hear a 40-year-old band story instead.
Thank you. Hello, I'm the 40-year-old man that she's married to, right? Goodness gracious, what an introduction. So my name is Josh. I'm really excited to be here with you guys tonight because my story does have the things that Christine would have talked about interwoven in it. I haven't played the role of a mom or a dad, but I do remember a morning when I was in my car and kind of doing something I did a lot with a friend of mine. His name was David James, a police officer here in Comanche. And I would go to Dave's house and I would pull up and I would pick him up and we would drive to DeWitt and we would play racquetball together. And there was a particular morning when Dave got in the car that I simply just asked him what I normally would, which is, how you doing? And normally he'd be like, hey Josh, doing great. And Dave didn't say anything. I said, Dave, what's up? And next thing I could tell was that Dave was crying. And when Dave composed himself, he went on to tell me that he would like us, before we went to play racquetball, to head to a trailer just a few blocks from here so that we could possibly encounter a dad and whoever else may be there whose son had completed suicide that morning while his dad was at work, and instead of coming to school, he took his life. So Dave and I drove my car right over to the far trailer a few blocks away. And we went and knocked on the door, and no one was there. But Dave and I stood in that front yard, and we simply prayed for those people. Dave had spent time with Jordan just the night before, because in his role as a police officer, he was having to spend some time with Jordan talking about some things. And Dave understood there were some things Jordan was going through, but he definitely knew this. They were not serious enough to make that decision he did the next morning. And then I'll speed up a couple years, and I found myself in a restaurant across the table from Richard, Jordan's dad. And Richard was telling me, I don't know why I'm sitting here with you. I've been drugged to your church, all this different stuff. You should all drag yourself there, by the way. Just kidding. And I guess my son might follow me, too. And I started to unfold the story for him about what happened that morning. And I watched Richard's eyes get real big. And I watched Richard connect some things in life where he knew that him and I were just supposed to cross paths in that moment. And I was able to spend some time with him before he passed away not too long after that to just become his friend. To be someone he could joke around with, get mad at, get frustrated with, do life with. But the biggest thing is, suicide is prevalent in our area. It's something that I can probably guarantee has affected every single person in this room. Maybe not so close as it has Christine and her family, but maybe it's more like a story like I have with a friend. Maybe it's a story of many of the students that in this area have taken their life. Maybe it's the story of you participating in an event like this to learn more. The other thing I know, which really brings this whole idea of mental illness and depression and all kinds of different things right to the forefront for me, is just in this room, there are probably 12 to 15 people who are suffering from some type of mental illness. So it basically means everyone who's sitting at a table other than Mrs. Seewee, one of you, or two of you, maybe like I was, suffering silently from a disease that was causing a lot of problems in my life. And when I first recognized, as I've kind of got help for my depression and my attention deficit disorder, I've been able to look back that it was about 8 years of age when the stuff I struggled with when it was depression and attention deficit disorder started to play out in my life. My family would have never sat in this room. No way. Even though things were completely out of control at our house, what people knew outside of our house would have never, ever allowed us to sit at one of these tables. So for parents who are here, grandparents who are here, I give you guys kudos because you took a big step. For the students who are here, I'm excited you're here because those two former teachers I had no idea that every time I walked in to that high school, I was wrestling with depression. On the outside, I looked okay. On the outside, people thought our family was okay. When I came and sat there, the teachers even said after they heard my story, "Josh, we can remember back. You weren't one of the kids we needed to worry about." And someone in this room is probably the student or adult that no one probably thinks they need to worry about. And right here in this moment, you're going, someone needs to know that I'm suffering. But there have been things in my life that have caused it to be difficult. I grew up in a house where my dad was still is, pretty influential businessman in our area. He's run his own business for over 30 years. But at about the age of 8, I also recognized that my dad was an alcoholic, a drug addict, an adulterer, and he abused me in many different ways. He would cut me with words. Because of his past, he kind of viewed me through his lens and how he saw his dad and got called things like fat, things like I wasn't going to amount to anything. I slowly had to become my mom's protector because my dad would come home from the bar and he would start to throw things, maybe break something. And I felt at the age of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 that I needed to protect my mom from my dad. I started to suffer in silence. I started to be ashamed of our situation. I started to cope in really unhealthy ways. The first thing that I ever turned to cope with my mental illness was food. In eighth grade, I started to eat about the biggest meal of my day once my dad would finally come home from the bar, a fight would usually occur and everyone else would go to bed. I would go find as much food as I could eat. And that was the first way I ever medicated myself. And that went on for 30 years, from the age of 8 until the age of 38. As I started to grow up, I somehow got through high school, but things were just crazy all the time. And then I started to make some different types of decisions after I finished my first year of college to start to deal with the mental illness. I started to drink. Remember the first time I smoked weed? Remember when one of my friends put a little bit of cocaine on the first bong I ever did with cocaine on it? Remember being in an apartment where I smoked enough meth that I guess I blacked out for about 2 minutes? It was terrible. And I was making all these decisions that were so destructive and taking me to a place of despair and hurt and pain. And even though I wasn't making an immediate decision to take my life, I was taking my life with all of those decisions every single day. And it led up to this moment on Christmas Eve of 1998, where I had done the largest amount of cocaine and actually stood in a bar not too far away from here that I passed. I don't think it's the same name, but I stood on this table in that bar and I announced to everyone in command, Clinton, that I was the king of the world and that I would kick anyone's you know what in this place. And I specifically did that for one person. His name was Josh Little. And he was a guy who wrestled at the University of Iowa. So I'm thinking, I'm the king of the world. I'm going to take down the big dog. And my friends took me out of there, and the most crucial moment of my life occurred in the early morning of those hours, because I had an experience that changed me. And during that experience, I woke up to the idea that every single decision I was making was leading me on a path that was ultimately going to end my life. And I saw like this mirror, and in that mirror, I just felt like I was seeing the person who was making the decisions. It didn't matter that my parents were getting divorced. It didn't matter that, you know, I had ended up in jail for a night fighting my dad. It didn't matter that I had stolen thousands of dollars from my mom. It didn't matter that I had slept with prostitutes. Didn't matter that I even found myself in some of the chat rooms that Jeff will share. Wasn't doing exactly what he's talking about, but lots of decisions where my untreated mental illness and in the pain and hurt of life, I almost found myself gone. What was crazy about the next day was the fact that when I started to do cocaine the last time, I was with two friends, and their names were John and Shane, and John and I are still alive, but Shane went home at the same time I did, and he went home to take a shower and then to go out and do some stuff with his family for Christmas, and they found him naked first in the hallway, dead of an overdose. Life can be hard. It can be difficult. Maybe some of the stuff I'm sharing real quick in my story you can relate to. Maybe you're a student who walks into this school or a different school, and you sit at a table, and you know that on the outside people think you're okay, but on the inside you are broken and you are hurting. Maybe you're a student like Morgan was, where you were good at school and you were good at the track team and you were looking like you had friends and you were okay, but there are people who are bullying you and they are hurting you. And it's causing you to wonder whether or not your life is even worth living. You're not alone. An event like this is a place where you could reach out to anyone in this room and find that you're not suffering by yourself. Maybe you're a parent who's kind of like my dad was. And there's a lot of stuff going on in your life that is kind of rushing through when you're a parent and you thought, maybe, you know what, maybe when I get married this will go away. Maybe when I have kids this will go away. Maybe, you know, one more step this way will go away. And really what you don't recognize is you're probably a man who's suffering from depression. You're probably a man who's suffering from the guilt and the shame of, you know, maybe sitting across the table from someone where you're doing the things I've talked about. Maybe you're a spouse who has to go home to that, or a kid that needs to, or just fill different people in the different blanks. But 12 to 15 of us in here are doing one of two things. You're either getting up like I do in the morning now after my wife had the courage about 5 years ago to look at me and say, Josh, I think you're clinically depressed. As we sat on the couch after we had our two little guys, Zeke and Sam, and we were making a decision in that moment whether we were going to continue to be husband and wife. Because my anger and my frustration and the untreated mental illness that I was walking through was destroying our marriage, and it was already starting to set an incredibly bad example for our kids. So I went to the doctor, And the doctor said, your wife is right. Guys, you ever hear that? And from that moment, every single morning, I've gotten up and I've taken medication that has helped clear the fog and the darkness of my clinical depression. Then as I started to get better from that, one day my wife started to hint again that she didn't think I was probably quite all right yet. And she said, I think you have attention deficit disorder. And I said, I'm really tired of telling me what type of disorders I have, sweetie. So I said, I'll prove it. I guarantee you I can Google and take some test about ADD. And I did, and well, I scored really good, but it's not the way you wanted to score good. So once again, I went to the doctor, and my doctor said to me, as he laughed, I've known you've had ADD since I met you. Well, why didn't you say something? And he said, it's kind of weird to actually talk to someone about that when you don't know how to bring it up. And that was a big light bulb for me. This isn't a normal thing. Even when your doctor knows there's a way he could have helped you for the last 13 years, it's still not something that's just so every day to be able to talk about. And over the last handful of months, I've now been taking medication every day for that, and it's been helping. And I believe the last 6 months, even though through some really, really hard stuff, I think I've found the combination that is helping me live the healthiest I've ever had. And for me, it is faith. It is having courage to go and lay down my pride and tell a doctor I needed help. It is listening to the people around me who speak into my life when they can see some things are maybe not right. It takes hard work just not to quit. As a matter of fact, on Monday, December 21st of just last year, I've never been closer than making the decision to end my life. And I'm not kidding. I'm trying to get your attention. It's going through some of the hardest stuff I have in my role as a pastor, in my role as a husband, in my role as a dad, and some really hard things that happened the day before. And I made the decision that I just think I'm done. And I have a gun at my house. And one of the things I decided a handful of years ago during another situation where my mental illness was rising up, I decided not to have ammo in the house. And I'm really glad I didn't, because I don't know if I'd be here tonight. In all honesty. A couple weeks ago, I had to get a key for a place that people needed to get into, and I started moving some stuff around in a shelf, and I pulled this box away, and right behind the box I found a full box of ammunition that had been 6 feet away from me during that morning. And you know what kept me alive that day wasn't like all the good things of life. It was a frustration about where I was, but it was a simple fact that I knew there had to be a better day tomorrow than I was experiencing then. And I wasn't happy about it, and I didn't know how it was going to change. But I survived that day. And I can look at some people around these tables who I know, and some of us are surviving every single day. And we're fighting every single day. And we're pushing through the difficult things of our past, and we're having the courage to go and get help, and we're having the courage to reach out to other people and let them know that we care. And that's what I want to encourage us in this room to do. No one should leave here tonight without a role to play. No one should leave here tonight without a heart to reach out to the Morgans, or with a heart to reach out to the Josh Meyer who just walks into the school and it looks okay, but one person who would have just maybe tried to go a little layer deeper Could have been someone who walked with me and kind of pointed me in a direction where I knew I had some support through some really hard stuff. Now that's some heavy stuff, and I always like to enjoy, I always enjoy sharing, like, so what's happened? You know, just like 3 months ago, 4 months ago, you were going through that? Well, I never got to have my two little boys in the room when I've shared my story. And I'm glad I'm here to be their dad. And I'm glad that right before I came up here, one of them got up and he just puckered his little lips up and just said, I want to give you a kiss on your cheek, Dad. I know my kids love when I take them to school. I know my kids love when I walk in the door because they tackle me. I know they love me because when I'm not there, they tell me how much they miss me. It's great that there's been healing in the relationship that I have with my dad. And one of the reasons that healing is taking place is because my dad's medicated for the mental illnesses that he had been wrestling with. And for about the last 6-7 years of his life, he has faithfully taken his meds, and he is a different person. And that shows you, even if you want to work hard at getting better, sometimes we need the different avenues of help that are there. Medicine, counseling, relying on friends and family. We know enough just living in the area that we do, that we have a battle going on for our lives every day. And I think most of us come to this room because we've seen people we love and we care about lose that battle to the point where they've made the decision that their story here on earth was done. So my challenge tonight is, what is there to live for tomorrow? If you're the person who's wrestling with mental illness and it's causing you just to do things that are destructive in your life, I ask you, go talk to someone you trust. Go talk to your doctor. Go talk to a friend. Go talk to anyone. Find me on Facebook and I can help you get directed to the help you need. If you're someone who's suffering alone because you know someone around you has mental illness and you're not sure how to bring that up, then reach out to some of those very same people. And know this, no one who has suffered from mental illness and has gotten the help that they needed has ever looked at the person who had the courage to reach out and help them and say, I wish you had done that. I guarantee you 100% when you take the chance and reach out to someone and they can walk a path of healing, they will never, ever be frustrated that you took a step that may have been a little awkward. If you're a student who walks in to school and you're being bullied and you're being hurt, go and seek out help from your parents. Go and seek out help from your teachers. I don't care if your first decision is to go right to the head principal. Go and stand up for yourself and know that your life is valuable and that you have worth. And your life has meaning. And it has such worth that you should never have to walk alone if you're going through mental illness or if you're going through abuse or if you're going through situations where you're being bullied, no matter how it takes place. So, thanks for listening to a little bit of my story. That's what happens when I have about 2 hours to try to figure out what to say up here. And the biggest thing is, like my little introduction said, it's about having hope. And I want you to know that I have hope that everyone in this room will leave a little bit more educated about the things we're talking about, have a story even out of such a hard situation of the Schmidt story or even some of the stuff in my story, but it would be something that will ignite you to take a step to play a role in bringing change to people around you and bringing change within the situations that we see in our communities with mental illness and bullying. So thank you guys, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the evening.